In 2004, Phil Guymon retired from laziness and computer games and began riding a bike to lose weight. Years later, against all odds, he realized his lifelong dream of becoming a professional athlete. After years of amateur bicycle races, of sacrificing stability and living out of a suitcase while working his way through cycling's minor leagues, he was signed to a team in the Pro Tour, the sport's highest level. But once there, he found that turning pro didn't instantly solve his problems, it didn't make life easy, and it wasn't quite what he thought. He writes about it in his new book, Draft Animals, Living in the Pro Cycling Dream Once in a While. It's a Penguin Books original, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Phil Guymon to the roundtable this morning. Phil, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
What led you to want to write the book and to tell your story?
I guess I had something to say. That was the main thing. I had a lot of free time also. I think there was a few things. I'm kind of a rare person who, in a lot of people, like, oh, you're living the dream. You got to do the thing you always wanted. And I think everyone kind of either gave up on that or couldn't make it or something. At least in my generation, we're all told, like, oh yeah, just, you know, give everything and you can be whatever you want to be when you grow up. And what I kind of learned is that you can't, but you can come close and you can kind of carve out little points where it is what you wanted and it is what you dreamed. That's kind of my broad message. And then the smaller one is everyone sort of thought, you get to ride your bike for a living. That's great. You're super lucky. It's like, yeah, all right, here's what it's really like, you jerks. Here's how that is.
So you were a professional cyclist from 2006 to 2016. At what point did it come on your radar as something that you wanted to do, A, and B, something you wanted to do professionally?
Yeah, it was sort of piecemeal. Like, I never... When there's an amateur category system when you race. Like my first race, I was a category 5. It's like the lowest it gets, and I was like, I really want to be a category 4, and I won a couple of races, and then I was like, okay, I'm gonna try to be a cat 3, and I keep doing that until all the way up to the highest level. It was kind of, it was never like I want to be pro. It was until I was good enough to be pro was that kind of my goal. Which maybe I was looking too small. And that was part of my problem, but I got all the way to the top, kind of just one little step at a time, as you do.
And the subtitle of the book is "Living the Pro Cycling Dream Once in a While." So, how much of a dream was that? I mean, as you're doing it for that 10-year span of time, is it the best? I mean, is it? Do you realize that you are living a dream?
Well, that's sort of the thing is whatever dream you get, you know, whether you get to be a pro cyclist or you get to be a rock star, like there's still, you know, I still had to, there was a time I flew to China and I landed at like 6 a.m. China time and I had to race that morning at 10 a.m. And then, you know, you have to put your bike together and you're adjusting to time zones and you're crashing. And if you're a rock star, you're still tuning your instrument. You're still setting up drums. That everything sort of has a reality to it, and kind of nothing is sort of the imaginary dream that we're all chasing is kind of just that. So you have to sort of find your own happiness, and you have to find, once in a while, I had to carve out these little moments where, like, okay, right now I'm living the dream. Right now, you know, like, my life still isn't easy. You know, I was the highest I got paid at the highest level in pro cycling was $65,000 for the year, which is great. But, you know, it's not life-changing kind of
not that
Monaco
great.
Palace kind of money.
Right.
Yeah, it's great to ride a bike, you know, I'm not going to argue. But it wasn't what I'd expected it to be when I got there. I thought it'd be a lot more when I got to that level. But I was like, okay, this sucks and this sucks and this is really hard. But I won a race here and that felt great. And now I'm going to ride my bike to the Mediterranean and have a crepe and a coffee. And no one can tell me I'm not living the dream today. And that's sort of how you have to treat it, I think. And I think everyone who's chasing a dream or just doing their thing can kind of take a lesson in that. And if you can't make your dream a reality, then you make your reality a dream. And you kind of, okay, this is my little point. This is what I wanted.
There's a great line from the movie Broadcast News where the William Hurt character, who becomes an anchorman, says to the reporter, who's played by Albert Brooks, and says, well, what do you do when your reality supersedes your dreams? And the Albert Brooks character says, well, you keep it to yourself.
Yeah, I, I know a couple of those guys.
Yeah.
I know a couple of those guys. They do exist, but it's not in my sport and in pro cycling, it's like 10 guys. and everybody else is like, oh, we're not. Oh, crap. We're stuck.
Now, I talk about this, obviously, in the book. But so there's this, you go through, you're riding right at the time when all of the suspicions are going on regarding doping, and it's prevalent in the sport, and or at least it's rumored to be prevalent in the sport. How did you see it, and how did you sort of live through that time doing your own thing?
The sport that I kind of fell in love with watching as a teenager was the Lance Armstrong, and that was when he was on his Tour de France streak, and that was the thing that I was chasing. And by the time I got good enough to be a pro, it turned out none of that was real. And not only were all of my heroes kind of full of crap, the sponsors were gone, and there's fewer teams. So now, like, I didn't even know what I was chasing anymore. And there's half the jobs there used to be. And every year I'm like climbing a ladder that's being chopped down from beneath me. But there was always sort of one little thing where it's like, I just won that. I can't quit yet. I could always kind of fool myself into one more year, which I strung together for 10 years.
And at the point where you say, okay, I'm good, I'm done, is it your body telling you that, or is it your mind telling you that?
It was a lot of things. It was when I finally sort of got to the highest level, it was, you know, when you first start, and if you're the follow your dreams generation, you're kind of like, oh, you can be the best if you outwork everybody, if you you just do it, right? That's what we're pumped into our brains from childhood. And I sort of did that for a long time as I was able to, you know, I started out the year as the young guy on the team, the new guy, and by the end of the year, I was the best guy on the team, and they're working for me. And that worked for a long time, and I'd climb that ladder. And then there was a point where I was at the top. I was on one of the best teams in the world. I'm doing the biggest races. And I realized I was never going to be the best. Like, my ladder was done. I was as far up as I was going to get. And at that point, I sort of take a step back and say, like, okay, if I can't win, then what's the point of me? You know, it was a weird gift that God made me so good at riding a bike up a mountain that I could be, you know, it's like a superpower, but then it's like, oh, there's 50 guys who are better than me, so now what do I do? And my answer was, I'll write a book. I'll be the guy I'll be the only guy in the pack who can write a book and tell you what that feels like and tell you what it's like to be a professional cyclist and to chase that dream. And then, then there was a point where the sport sort of continued to shrink, and it was hard to find a job, and I wasn't getting faster anymore. And the best move to do was step aside and let a younger guy have a shot at my job.
How hard is it to come to that realization?
In a way, it was a relief. It was gradual, but in a way, it was a relief that, like, okay, I've done all, I didn't do all that I wanted, but I did all that I could, and I knew that. I knew that, like, I did the work, and I did my best, and there were people who were so much better than me. Like, it was a shock, and it happened, you know, it happened, like, during a race, but it was just, like, there's dudes who I will never get there, but there was also, like, because I got to that level, there was no denying it. You know, like, I couldn't trick myself anymore. I don't get to have that dream. And I get to circle back and see what that means.
Where do you see, and we'll end here, but I'm curious as to where you see the sport of cycling heading as you leave it and you see where it has been, where it was when you started, what you wanted it to be, and then where you left it. Where do you see it going?
The environment that led to all the scandals and kind of let them go too far still prevails, where there's just a lot of power struggles at the highest level. There's very few sponsors, there's very little money, there's very little TV revenue, and everyone's kind of just going to war over it rather than, like, stepping back and trying to see how to grow the sport. So it doesn't look like the sport is going to sort of improve and move to the mainstream anytime soon. But I think, like, you know, more and more people are just getting into riding a bike for its own sake, which is the right way to do it. And I think that's where it'll have to start, and maybe something new will sort of evolve from that in the long run. But nothing beats just going outside and riding your bike. So that's, you can't take that away. Whatever the sport wants to try and screw it up, I still have to go outside every day, and I still love it.
Do you ever want to be the guy, or do you ever think about being the guy? Well, you know what? I've had success. I'm going to go out and I'm going to try to change it. I'm going to leave. I'm not going to be active participant in it, but I'm going to try to change things.
I did when I was in it. That's part of sort of how I got to have, like, I had a following and fans and readers, like, far out of proportion to my physical abilities or results. And I think it was because, like, I was loud and I was complaining about the dopers, and I was kind of like when you win a race in Europe, when you win a big race, you stand on the stage and two girls in short skirts come and give you a kiss on the cheek. That's the prize in 2017. And it's like, what century is this? Stop that. This looks horrible. Why are we doing this thing? And I made kind of an effort from the inside, and eventually the sport, that was probably part of it, but the sport, still kicked me out from the competitive part. So now I put on a bike ride. I put on kind of a charity bike ride. It's this Sunday in Malibu where people come, we make a course, we raise money for No Kid Hungry, which is associated with a bunch of celebrity chefs, and they bring, like, amazing food, and cookies are on the course. So it's kind of like, this is what's good about cycling. I don't know about all that over there, but this is what's good about cycling. This is something that I can kind of control and provide to people and just give. I'm going to give, it's in the end of this week, 1,200 people are going to have a great day on a bike. So that's sort of my contribution now. And I think that suits me at this point.
The name of the book is Draft Animals, Living the Pro Cycling Dream Once in a While. It is a Penguin Books original, and it's a great pleasure to have Phil Guymon on the program. Phil, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Draft Animals, published by Penguin. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.